Good afternoon, Dr. Dan Guerra here with Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. And we're going to be doing lecture number 12 on plasmalogens. And hopefully this will be a lot of fun for everyone because we're going to be talking about yeast metabolism, particularly the expression of genes in yeast controlled by mTORC, and then the association of that control specifically involving sphingolipid metabolism and transferring that mTORC analysis over into the mammalian system. All of this is contrived from the plasmalogen apodiction of control over cholesterol metabolism and ultimately sphingomyelin biosynthesis relative to myelination of white matter axons in the central nervous system. And this only being one component, as you know, of what plasmalogens are involved in human biochemistry. And more on all that later, too, at the metaphysical level. Probably not this lecture, but probably next. So let's go. So I'm going to talk about the adduced mTOR association with plasmalogen apodiction of myelination, in association, of course, with cholesterologenesis. I knew you'd like that title. All right, now, YPK1 is a downstream effector of mTORC2 in yeast. And we have to talk about yeast because it's where the specificity of mechanisms of control have been well worked out for sphingolipids. Surprisingly, sphingolipid control at the level of gene expression in humans is not very well developed. And that's because we're still studying the downstream effect of sphingolipids on gene expression. So you see, one is proximal, one's distal. So we know that sphingolipids are in the membrane. We know that they are very powerful bioactive membrane lipids for multiple utilization. For example, just for signaling transduction, utilizing ceramide, ceramide-1-phosphate, sphingosine, sphingosine-1-phosphate. If you recall, even the sphingosine phosphates have some 6 different receptors for control over, among other things, transcription of genes, including a host of inflammatory systems in leukocytes and lymphocytes. So that's just a reminder of what we used to talk about when we talked about sphingolipids. But now we're going to be trying to key in on the transcriptional control over sphingolipid biosynthesis. And that's why we're talking about yeast. Okay. So stimuli that activate TORC2 include an inhibition of sphingolipid biosynthesis in yeast. Okay. Now, what does that suggest? That mTORC is a primary kinase for de novo sphingolipid biosynthetic polypeptide coding messenger RNA transcription. Okay. Primary direct substrates for mTORC2 are known as the AGC family of protein kinases. This, again, is yeast. And the major one is YPK1. Okay. Now, within the human kinome, this has to do with phosphorylation, right? Kinases. The kinase domain of YPK1 has a great amount of homology to human SGK1. And in fact, the functional expression of SGK1 basically will rescue a YPK1 delta mutant. Okay? So that means the SGK kinase in humans is functioning like the YPK1. So right now you already have an association here, okay? Now, AKT1, which is normally associated with the regulation upstream and downstream of mTORC in mammalian cells, plays another role, but right now we're not discussing that, okay? So YPK1 expression appears to be controlled by a specific zinc finger family transcription factor called COM2. So there have been paralogs of COM2 also found in humans. So we're getting an idea of more of the intimate detail of where that transcription factor association lies. Now, the phosphoacceptor site specificities of the YPK1 and the human analog SG kinase 1 are identical, or practically identical. And this has been studied by using purified enzymes, in vitro substrates, and of course, using a little bit of in silico, unbiased random peptide libraries, etc. Now, based on all of those findings, there is a consensus sequence, an amino acid sequence, that is necessary. It's basic amino acids as well as hydrophobic amino acids for the SGK1 or YPK1 being regulated by mTOR to control sphingolipid metabolism to be able to function. Okay? So it appears that the YPK1, which is the most studied, has the highest affinity substrates in a manner similar to that first observed way back at looking at protein kinase A. In fact, the phosphoacceptor motif in the catalytic domain is very similar, as is some of the substrate specificity. Okay, and this is markedly distinct now, I want to make sure you understand, from AKT MAP kinase pathways. Okay, so it's a new phosphorylation system for some of us at in authentic biochemistry. I've worked a lot with studying Drosophila and yeast lipid metabolism, so I've heard of all this before, but many people have not. And I try to stay away from yeast and Drosophila, as you know, because we try to do mammalian, particularly human, but sometimes we have to dip all the way back in there. And it's better to understand the true regulation once we then eventually unfold what's occurring in the human kinome, as well as the sphingolipidome, right? Okay. So for YPK1, the yeast kinase, phosphorylation has a major impact on integral membrane protein synthesis. So such proteins as the agua glycerylporin 1, which is also known as FPS1, as well as many peripheral plasma membrane proteins like the FPK1 and the AKL1, as well as a series of alpha arrestins known as ROD1, ART4, and ALY2. Okay? So you understand why, looking at the transcriptional downstream patterning of mTOR to YPK1 and discovering right away, first blush, that many of the what is in the transcriptome that becomes a proteome from YPK1 ends up being integral membrane proteins. So if these transcription factors and kinases are controlling the integral membrane proteins, they're also going to be involved in controlling membrane lipid biosynthesis. You see how the association would be obviously necessary, right? Now, this isn't just in the plasma membrane. These membrane proteins you find in the endoplasmic reticulum, the Golgi apparatus, the mitochondrial membranes, all the endomembrane system as well as the plasma membrane. Okay. Now, some other proteins of significance that are regulated by YPK1 are the ORMs 1 and 2. And also the ceramide synthase subunits LAC1 and LAC2. Now, what are those? What is the ORM, right? The ORMs in yeast are actually the serine palmitoyl transferase genes. Okay? That's the very first step in sphingolipid biosynthesis. We're going to go through the pathway in a minute. I'm sure all of you have this, you know, it's completely developed as a camera-based sharp image in your mind. Sphingolipid metabolism, because I know many of you are totally aware of it. That's a joke, of course. In fact, somebody I know really well, when they watched one of my sphingolipid lectures on video, said, "Yeah, that's sphingolipid metabolism. Wow, it's really cool." And I said, "Yeah, it is." And they, of course, were kidding. And I, of course, was not. Right? Okay. Anyways, YPK1, master regulator of plasma membrane, lipid, and protein homeostasis, not just in yeast, but also in fungi, and the paralog that we just were talking about, controlling both elements in the endomembranous system, also regulated the same way in mammals, particularly in the human. Okay. So a couple of things to keep in mind. mTORC, of course, is a kinase. So if it phosphorylates certain tyrosine residues, threonine residues, and serine residues on the YPK1 polypeptide, you're going to get an alteration of expression then downstream of multiple genes. So phosphorylation at, let's see here, threonine 504 and serine 644 will inhibit the expression of the SPT genes in yeast, but will promote the LAC1, LAG1 genes, and those are ceramide synthases. So that's further down the pathway, okay? So, but both of them are sphingolipid metabolism. So let's do the sphingolipid metabolism, because it's, I like I said, I know you have a complete understanding of it. Let's do it one more time. All right, palmitoyl-CoA plus serine via serine palmitoyl transferase will generate the 3-ketosphingonine, which then will be reduced utilizing NADPH, of course, to the sphingonine base. Sphingonine can then be phosphorylated via sphingosine kinase, or sphingonine can also be metabolized via an acyl sphingosine synthase, generating a 4-hydroxysphingonine. Now, sphingonine in the mammal system primarily is going to go through the dihydroceramide synthase with, of course, a fatty acyl-CoA, and that will generate dihydroceramide, which needs to be desaturated. Of course, NADPH is necessary for desaturation, aerobic saturation, as well as molecular oxygen, and that will generate ceramide. Okay, now that's going to give you the entire ceramide backbone with that very important trans-double bond and what was originally the fatty acid that built the backbone, okay, the sphingonine backbone, you understand? Okay. Now, ceramide then is going to be potentially utilized for the entire family of sphingolipids, including sphingomyelin, which is going to have as its polar head group phosphonocholine. That's what sphingomyelin is, right? But also all of the glycosyl sphingolipids and the acylceramides. And so with the backbone there, you're going to have sphingosine, sphingonine, and even 4-hydroxysphingonine. All of those complex sphingolipids can be converted directly from N-acyl derivatives or from either dihydroceramide or ceramide. Okay. Ultimately, then ceramide could be phosphorylated itself. And in the activity of ceramide phosphate versus ceramide alone are almost contradictory. They almost work against one another. Similar true with sphingosine phosphates. Okay. But not quite that clear. Anyway, ceramide can go through the ceraminidase activity, removing the amide-linked fatty acid. Then you're generating sphingosine, free sphingosine, which is what gets phosphorylated via sphingosine kinase. Okay, and there's also phosphatases for all of those phosphorylated lipids we just discussed. Okay? So the key feature here is that there are alpha and retinoid X receptors. And the alpha receptor is typically a peroxoproliferative activated receptor alpha, but not always. So you have PPAR alphas and retinoid X receptors, which both then utilize selective ligands that will be involved in the increased expression of some of those genes which code for some of the proteins I just went through, in particular the serine palmitoyl transferase. Okay, and that's the mammalian system, right? So not only do you have those SPK kinases, you also have to keep in mind what are the transcription factors. I just told you what they were. PPAR alpha and RXR, retinoid X receptor types. Okay. All right. So we can move on. Now the mTORX, there's two of them. Remember, we talked about this last lecture. They synchronize cellular growth. Again, they're kinases, master kinases in the cell. And besides growth, they will also regulate proliferative division, which can include oncogenic events. And that can be turned on by environmental cues, normal physiological cues like growth factors, also the availability of certain nutrients, particularly nitrogen-containing nutrients. Now, once mTOR is activated, there are multiple pathways that are going to be converging together with mTOR control over anabolism. So all the macromolecular structures you can think about, complex carbohydrates, of course, nucleic acids, polypeptides, and what's really important, of course, lipids, right? So the regulation of all of those macromolecules are going to be derivatized from mTOR function. And at the cellular level, at the physiological level, mTOR also then is at least indirectly related to the control over total cellular mass, cellular differentiation, and as we have already alluded to, proliferation. Okay? And mTOR is ultimately then linked to some dysfunctions, such as inappropriate immune cell expansion, cancer, as we've already noted, and if you want to consider it a dysfunction, which of course it isn't, aging. Okay? Aging is just a chronic disease, right? So at least that's the way I look at it. And that, by the way, I'm aging, right? Of course, all of you are. So mTORC1 regulates the processes required for cell proliferation, including pentose phosphate pathway, generating what? Ribose 5-phosphate, NADPH, reductive biosynthesis. But also mTORC1 controls protein translation, lipolysis and lipogenesis, and mitochondrial and peroxisomal biogenesis. Yes. Now, all that regulation that we just talked about could be downstream from another class of kinases known as the S6K1s. Okay. Now, mTORC2 is different. Remember, the polypeptide there is going to be TORC2, right? It regulates, yes, the pentose phosphate pathway, but it does so by phosphorylation of the transketolase enzyme, which is not considered the normal regulator of the OPP pathway, or also known as the PPP pathway, because there we're thinking more about the dehydrogenases, right? Yeah, one of them, of course, being decarboxylated. You know, generating the 5-carbon ribulose and then ribose 5-phosphate, also xylose 5-phosphate. But then the whole gamut of generating NADPH in those very first two oxidations, right, of the glucose-6-phosphate, gluconolactone, right? Okay. So mTORC, more involved in transketolase control, hexosamine biosynthesis, and the way it controls that is through the phosphorylation of the glutamine fructose-6-phosphate aminotransferase. mTORC2 also is a big player in controlling SREBP1. Remember, that's the steroid response element binding protein 1. And also our old friend, HIF1-alpha, hypoxia-1-alpha transcription factor. Remember, that transcription factor is turned on during hypoxia. Big player in cancer, right? It's particularly in the whole control over the aerobic glycolysis that can occur even in the presence of oxygen that promotes tumor growth, right? We've talked about this multiple times. Right? Now, also interestingly, mTORC2 controls the FOXO1-mediated transcriptional regulon, right? And again, this is going to be heavily involved in lipid metabolism. So now you get kind of the idea, not kind of, you do get the basic structure of what's going on with mTORC. So through the regulation of the pentose phosphate shunt, mTORC1 and 2 provide the NADPH necessary for lipogenesis. Remember, cholesterologenesis, fatty acid synthesis, complex lipid synthesis. Cholesterologenesis all require NADPH. So all the major lipid classes. So obviously, mTORC is a mediator of lipogenesis. Cells, of course, are going to require lipids for all the cellular membranes, something we were discussing last time. Also keep in mind that lipids act as energy storage. No, not the phosphoglycerol lipids. No, not the sphingolipids. And no, not cholesterol. Those are not storage lipids for bioenergetics. What is storage form? Triacylglycerol. Do all cells store a lot of triacylglycerol? No. What stores a lot of triacylglycerol? Errantly, kidney and liver. Errantly meaning it's not supposed to store very much, but it does. Because normally, for example, the liver is trafficking out triacylglycerol via VLDL and LDL and IDL, right? Coming and going, coming and going. But triacylglycerol is also a major component in skeletal muscle, and also in association with the cardiac muscle, right? So beta activation of fatty acids are driving a lot of the bioenergetics of muscular activity in humans, right? Okay, so again, mTORC1 regulates the synthesis of fatty acids by controlling the nuclear translocation of, it's a kinase, the SREBP1. Of course, when the SREBP1 is in the nucleus, it will then control the transcription of all the components in fatty acid synthase. Not only that, but the rate-limiting step for a de novo FAS, cyclocarboxylase. Okay. Likewise, the initial desaturase generating oleo-CoA, that's called stereo-CoA desaturase, and the elongation of palmitic acid, of course, the sterile to stearic acid, and that's going to be the elongation reactions. All those are unique biosynthetic gene products for fatty acid elongation, all again controlled by mTORC1 via the SREBP1. Okay, so how does that transcription factor get in the nucleus? Translocated mTORC controlling this, but it's activated by insulin signaling through the AKT. And because this is all looking at saturated and monounsaturated fatty acids, it's going to link up to some phospholipid and plasmalogen biosynthesis, of course. And that is going to utilize AKT, right? That whole pathway. All right. There's also another really important cofactor in all this called Richter. And we talked about that in the past. I'm not going to talk about it right now. So mTORC1 regulates the SREBP1 indirectly via phosphorylation of the S6K1 kinase and the Krebs-regulated transcription coactivator 2, right? So this is, we're getting deeply into transcription factor control via mTORC, via phosphorylation through the SREBP transcription factor. Okay, good. Lipin 1 is also controlled. Remember what lipin 1 was? Yes, you should. That is phosphatic acid phosphatase. Very important thing we talked about in our mosaics, right? All right. So, I did bring it up then. Also, I should mention that mTORC1 controls demethylation of histone 3K9 methyl. Okay, that particular substrate. So there is an epigenetic control of mTORC1 as well. Okay, so now you've got, I think, some fundamental understanding. So mTORC2, that was mTORC1. Okay, it was all mTORC1. Look at my time here. Oh, we're doing okay, but I got to be careful. mTORC2 regulates lipogenesis again through, now we can start describing tissue specificity. So in the adipose, the control of mTORC2 is through the expression of the carbohydrate response element binding protein beta. That's the CHREBP beta. But in the liver, mTORC2 goes back and regulates just simply the SREBP1. Now, if you look at adipose tissue specific deletion of this cofactor, co-transcription factor, Richter protein, which is driven by the adiponectin. Remember, that's a adipokine. And that leads to decreased fatty acid synthesis, acetyl-CoA carboxylase, and that initial desaturation time, an elongase system. Okay? So that'll control over decreasing de novo lipogenesis is associated with a decrease in body mass in response to, and this is something I talk about all the time, we get into lipid nutrition, the decrease in body mass in response to a high-fat diet. Okay? High-fat diet actually causes lipid deposits to be hydrolyzed because it's a feedback regulatory system. No de novo fatty acids, no de novo adipose laid down, and high level of fat in the diet actually causes adipose to be degraded. Okay, so this is one of the regulatory components. I've talked about this before, and I know I have in some detail when we it got heavily into lipid nutrition, but it's been a while. But I just wanted to remind you of that now, right? So, because we're in that domain of major lipid homeostasis, you know, the rheostat for lipid homeostasis. Of course, mTORC1 is going to control lipolysis, that's lipase activity, and also beta oxidation, right? And also alpha oxidation. So, you know, removing fatty acids from triacylglycerol, that's the adipose triacylglycerol lipase, that's the ATGL enzyme. Okay, all of the expression of all those type of genes, as well as all the beta-ox genes, and yes, of course, carnitine palmitoyl transferases 1 and 2, right? And some of the CoA synthases as well, right? So, overall, this is a logical circuit. The mTORCs being regulated concomitantly with plasmalogen regulation of cholesterologenesis is going to lead to all the complex lipid formation, one of which is the synthesis of that polymer on certain white matter axons we call myelin. And that's how we got into this whole discussion, remember? So now that we're deeply talking about lipid, the enzymes that control lipogenesis, I'm reminding you why we're doing that. So when you think about plasmalogen's role, plasmalogen is a phosphoglycerol lipid. Just happens to have a vinyl ether linkage. So the de novo synthesis and the peroxisomal mediated control over the de novo synthesis and then plasmalogen's control over peroxisomal activity, remember the transporting of all the proteins in, and the control over that oxidation in that system, remember that, all that we talked about in this mosaic. That's all going to be linked directly to these mTORC pathways, these kinase cascades, I call them, because that's going to be regulating ultimately phosphorylation state and the so-called kinome, right? Which of proteins are phosphorylated, which aren't. And that's going to regulate then the mobility of transcription factors into the nucleus, which is going to ultimately control the expression of the genes involved in all of this lipid metabolism, as well as I just said, nucleic acid, carbohydrate, and protein synthesis. Right? So everything together in the cell, including all those anabolic control, as well as bioenergetics. Right? And there was an epigenetic factor. I just talked about the one demethylase, but there's much more we could talk about in terms of sirtuin production as well. But I'm going to stop there because I think you've got a good strong component of authentic biochemistry for a Saturday evening. I know that you're going to want to be studying this on a Saturday evening, especially Saturday night for the younger people in the audience, and so that you'll be all ready for the next time I lecture. Now, tomorrow, Sunday, I might give you a lecture tomorrow afternoon, depending on my availability. But if the worst case scenario, I will meet you again on Monday, but I might come back and give you a lecture. In fact, I've got an interesting lecture I was going to provide that I've already written. Again, somewhat metaphysical and somewhat in terms of my philosophy about biochemistry. And I've written it, and I might actually deliver that next. We'll see, because it connects to this directly, actually. All right, but for right now, I'm going to have to say bye for now.